Welcome back to Pursuing Justice. I'm your host, Harriet Hendel. We're talking to a guest that we spoke to last time. So as always, I encourage my listeners to tune in to part one. And our guest then and now is Dr. Tom Haney, who is going to tell us about his involvement with a really interesting organization, a nonprofit based in Philadelphia. It's called Books Through Bars. And Tom has a divinity degree. He served 30 years in law enforcement and criminal justice. He was one of the first paramedics in Pennsylvania, and he specializes in counseling people with violent, repetitive, compulsive disorders, which we will talk about now in part two. He's been active with Books Through Bars for 12 years, and he's president of the nonprofit. And welcome back, Tom. Good to have you with us again.
Harriet, thank you so much for having me back. I enjoyed the first program. I'm going to enjoy this equally.
Great. Well, it's great to talk to you. One of my favorite things are books and reading and learning. And there's not enough encouragement of that kind of thing with people who are serving time. So one of the things I wanted to ask you that I didn't get to ask you last time is, how in the world did you decide, with the background I just read, how did you decide to get involved with Books Through Bars?
Well, through my background, I've gotten to know a lot of, obviously, a lot of folks in law enforcement and criminal justice. I've gotten into all sorts of prisons and state and mental hospitals over the years. So when I retired, I wanted to continue to do something meaningful, but I didn't necessarily want to continue in the law enforcement criminal justice field. I didn't want to necessarily go into any kind of private practice in that respect, but I knew about Books Through Bars from their earliest beginnings. And when I came and moved here to Philadelphia, I retired here to Philadelphia, I said, well, you know what? I just didn't want to sit around also. You know, after you retire, it's a bad mistake to just sit around in the house and do nothing. So I said, let me go down. Let me introduce myself to the folks down there, and got involved with them and started at the bottom, reading the letters, going around the library, picking the books and filling out the invoices and getting them ready to be shipped out, and then took on more and more of the day-to-day responsibilities that go on behind the scenes at Books Through Bars, and just stayed there. I jokingly like to say, I have no other life, so I stayed there. That's not entirely true, but over the years, yeah. The people at Books Through Bars are now also my family. They're terrific friends.
That's wonderful.
So we get along great, and we all feel that we have a very important job to do.
You have a mission. Now, from the beginning, you said you were at the bottom rung. What is your responsibility now as head of, well, I guess you could say president? Is that accurate?
Well, I'm listed as the president, okay? Again, jokingly, I usually say, yeah, I'm the president, and my jobs are to clean the bathroom and sweep the floor. Books Through Bars is more of a collective where we really don't have a board of directors, but for legal purposes, because we are a 501(c)(3), we need a president, we need a secretary, and we need a treasurer to sign on to the legal documents. That really is what my responsibility is. Over the years, there's just so much to do. And over the years also, unfortunately, some of our family has moved on to other things. So there's always a job to pick up and do when somebody moves
on. Right.
Now, one of the things I enjoy, if I can add this real quick, Harry, one of the things I enjoy, though, is doing this, being the face of BTB.
Very important.
Doing podcasts, I go out and do various lectures at different places and kind of spread the word.
Yeah, I'm sure people don't necessarily know about this organization. I'm sure they don't.
This is very true. And, you know, folks on the inside know about our organization. But I'm always surprised how many folks on the outside here in Philadelphia don't even know that we're there at 4722.
Right. I hate to tell you how many times I've done fundraising for the Innocence Project, and I will say to people, do you know what that is? and how often I get this quizzical look, what is that? Innocence Project? So that's my mission, to educate people, to enlighten them, to open up their vistas and tell them about things like books through bars. So you served 30 years in law enforcement and criminal justice. Did that inform your decision to work with this organization? And do you want to tell us a little bit about what you did in law enforcement and criminal justice?
I'm not going to say a whole lot about law enforcement and what okay. I did, especially in law enforcement. Some of the positions I had over the years, not to sound too cryptic about it, I can't necessarily talk about.
Okay.
But as I moved through that career, did it inform me? Did it play, again here, did it play a role in volunteering for Books Through Bars? Over those years, I've seen some really drastic and sad changes within the prison system. Some of the things coming up that surround the prison industry complex. And then, you know, recognizing the need for better treatment programs, not just treatment programs, but better ways to treat people who are on the inside, which is one of my goals when I got my degree and started to pick up on counseling people on the inside, mostly on the inside, but every once in a while also with people that came out.
Now, earlier I mentioned in your bio, I guess you could say, or your background, that you specialize in counseling people with violent, repetitive, compulsive disorders. I think our listening audience would like to know more about what is that disorder?
Well, basically, again, it's a distinction made to a degree legally between obsessive compulsive disorder and repetitive compulsive disorder.
And what's the difference? To me, they seem a lot alike.
Exactly. Obsessive compulsive disorder, although both do have programs within the psychiatric community, psychologists and psychiatrists do a fair amount of treatment. Obsessive compulsive disorder is recognized by the Psychiatric Association as, can I say, a legitimate disorder. Repetitive disorders, not so much, but they do recognize that there is a need for some kind of treatment. One of the big ones is a lot of the people that I counseled were sex offenders.
Oh, really?
And unfortunately, well, today even less, most prisons have a sex offender unit. When I got it started back in the day, there were a couple forward-thinking states, Vermont being one and New Jersey being the other, that actually had a dedicated prison for sex offenders.
I did not know that. That's fascinating. A whole prison, not just
a unit. So to go there, you had to sit down with a counselor and they had to determine that, yeah, the behaviors that you were doing was indeed repetitive. And for whatever reason, they were compulsive and you could not control them yourselves.
So how do you approach someone like that?
Well, it can be very exasperating. Basically, very early on, and having a divinity degree, I worked with psychologists, with PhDs and psychiatrists along that line. So we all shared in some of the counseling services for the people within this particular field. Early on, we started to recognize some of the beginning programs that we were talking about with not just sex offenders, but with violent people. Used to be two programs that were called anger management and victim empathy. Started to realize these programs were no good. They weren't doing what they were designed to do. Victim empathy, and again, I'll make this real short. The program used to bring victims in and have offenders sit in front of them and listen to what the victims went through. And we had a fair amount of people, offenders, starting to cry and getting all upset. I remember one time a gentleman just collapsed on the floor in a fetal position, bawling his eyes out. And the victim say, see, now you know what we go through. But we started to realize is that they weren't empathizing with the victim. They were getting in touch with the trauma that they went through. And we're reliving some of this trauma through what we were putting. So to make a long story short, the same way with anger management, we're trying to teach you. These folks did not know, and still today yet, do not know what emotions are, what feelings are. So we realized we had to go back to the drawing board. Later on the program, the victim empathy was changed to empathy and compassion. We had to get guys to recognize what was going on in their own world, the feelings that were going on with them, and start talking about them. And of course, as part of the treatment program, talking about the trauma they went through, the abuses they went through, and I can get into some really horror stories. Now, don't misunderstand me, folks. There's a lot of people, a lot of you out there that went through similar things, but how does the saying go? Through the grace of God go I? A lot of you folks made it through. These folks on the inside didn't. And unless we addressed those problems, they were not coming out a whole person. We had to change because a lot of the folks on the inside thought they were horrible, disgusting people. They were worthless. They couldn't amount to anything. Nobody loved them. Nobody cared about them. They didn't even want to look at themselves in the mirror, let alone have anybody else look at them. I had one gentleman one time, he had Coke rim glasses. He had hair down to the top of his glasses and a beard up to the bottom of his glasses. We realized that's because he didn't even want to look at himself. Yeah. Fortunately, a few days later, he came into the therapy room and he had a haircut and his beard was gone. We knew we were getting through to him. Another little interesting too, and I know talking about sex offenders I know are some of the most hated people in the system. But through treatment, sex offenders really have some of the lowest recidivism rates.
I did not know that. I would have predicted it would have been the opposite.
Pennsylvania State, the parole board in Pennsylvania State many years ago now had a paper they put out, and they listed 10 crimes from the most recidivism to the lowest recidivism. Now, it didn't list all the crimes, obviously. 9 for the least recidivism was sex offenders, and 10 was non-drug-related murder.
Interesting. I had no idea. That's fascinating. Yeah, so you've been around the block, as they say.
It real quick to answer part of your question here. It can be very exasperating because it can take a very long time to get people to realize, wait a minute, I can change. I can be a different person. Maybe these people are saying something I really should listen to.
Well, that's of course what we hope when we send someone to prison, that they will turn around. But I think the prisons don't necessarily put a lot of weight and effort into helping to rehabilitate people.
Well, again, it's money. They don't.
Yes, it
they
is.
Don't have a. They don't put enough money in.
Money and skill.
And skill.
Training up the guards. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The Adult Diagnostic and Treatment Center, which I'm sorry, is one of those that really fell apart. This was a world-recognized treatment center back in the day. Unfortunately, until Jesse Tamanquaz and Megan Kanker. When he killed that little girl.
I don't know that case at all. Can you familiarize?
Jesse Tamanquaz was incarcerated for a couple of years at the ADTC and didn't participate in any of the treatment programs. He went out, got caught up in his old ways, and eventually killed a young girl by the name of Megan. This is where Megan's Law comes from.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes.
And killed her. And then since then, the ADDC was a dual-run facility. The inside of the facility was run by Health and Human Services, and the superintendent was a psychologist, I believe. And then the perimeter was controlled by the Department of Corrections. Then after that, they kind of moved in and dismantled it. It's still there. It's still doing, but it's not as good as it used to be. I don't know what happened with the program in Vermont. These were the only two programs. Between the two programs, there were people coming from all over the world to study these programs. But unfortunately, and then, of course, in regular prisons, I don't have a lot to say with the treatment programs in a lot of prisons. First of all, they're way too short. Some of these programs, you're only there for a couple of weeks or maybe on that unit for a couple of months. And then you're turned out into general population. And any growth you made in the treatment program is washed away in general population. Sorry, I have some feelings behind this.
No, that's important to say. I mean, you're not just speaking off the top of your head. You have been inside and you have direct experience. So you certainly are entitled to your feelings and your opinions. So a question about books through bars. Do you feel that the wardens are behind a program like this, or the Department of Corrections? You get support, a feeling of support from either?
My answer to that is no.
No.
No, I don't think we get a lot of support from that. A lot of them are, how should I put it here?
You would certainly think that they would want these free books coming in to help the men. What would be the reason they wouldn't support it?
It's not that they're not behind it. They just don't care.
Oh, well, that's...
Okay. And speaking about something like that, New York State actually has a law on the books for prisons where an inmate cannot get a free book. He has to buy the books.
What? Why? What's the rationale behind that?
That one I don't know. I can answer a couple of the others as far as some rationale goes, but that I think the biggest rationale behind it is if you buy a new book, you have to buy it from a publishing company or Amazon or something like that.
That is true.
Sometimes a bookstore. And the feeling is then it doesn't go through multiple hands. So it's unlikely to have contraband sent in.
That's correct. That I send books to many, many people and continue to do so, to people who are doing time. And the rule is across the board, I can't send it from my library because I could put something in there. But generally, I can send either hardcover or softcover, but it must come from a bookseller.
Exactly. Now, fortunately, before a lot of this started up, BTB and a couple of other organizations like ours, we also technically have to be connected with a bookseller of some kind. So Books Through Bard is connected through the publishing company. We don't use the publishing company. We don't live with the publishing. Actually, they moved to Canada. They're still around, but they're now located in Canada. But when we first started up, fortunately, we started up with New Society Publishers, Books Through Bars. So that's one of the ways we got vetted. Some other new organizations that want to try to get started, it's much harder to do.
So let's say Stephen King's book, whatever, he writes a book a year, right?
Yeah.
Let's say his latest book is something you desperately need. And so I'm going to donate some books to you because anytime I have a guest on that's part of a nonprofit, I always send a monetary donation. So let's say I'd like to buy that Stephen King title that all the guys want, or the new Grisham book, whatever that is. How do I do that if I want to buy a specific title, or doesn't it work that way?
Well, let me throw this out to explain this. And this is part of how BTB runs, which I think back here you have a question about that too. First of all, we ask everybody to go to our website. Website is booksthroughbars.org. And what I tell people, make sure for us that you have the Philadelphia address, because there are other Books to Prisoners organizations that used our name over the years.
Oh.
We're not affiliated with them, but we know a lot of these different organizations. If you want to donate a book, go to the website, see what books we need, see what books we desperately need, see what books we won't take. And then accordingly, if you're here in Philadelphia, you can drop them off to us. If you're elsewhere and you want to spend the money, please, by all means, send them to us. What we will not take in this respect, we will not take a book from family or friends who's sending a book in specifically for a specific inmate.
I see. Okay.
Okay, especially if you walk in off the street. But we won't take. This is one of our processes, and this is why we have a good relationship with a lot of prisons. The books come in, they are given to our librarian, they're sorted, and then they're put on the shelf.
Oh.
Okay. And then an outside, a totally different volunteer comes along, picks up the letter, they read the letter, they see what the person is asking for. Now they go through the library and pick the books as close as possible to what the person is asking for. If it happens to be that book, well, then that person gets that book. but the volunteer has absolutely no idea who sent the book in. A lot of times our librarians don't send the books in, and we're not sending it to a specific inmate that the family member might want to do that. We do that as a precaution so that we don't send contraband in.
Okay. Well, very good. So the key to anyone wanting to help you out is please go to booksthroughbars.org, and the rules and directions are right there.
Yeah, the donate page. We have obviously a money donate page and a book donate page, and our librarian keeps the book donate page very well up to date. Like last week, we needed Thrillers desperately. Saturday, I went in, and we got a big donation of Thrillers in. So now we don't need Thrillers so much anymore.
We'll see what's next, right?
But we do need something else.
Good. Do you happen to have a favorite genre yourself, a favorite type of book you like to read?
I don't necessarily have a favorite genre.
All right.
What I like is a good book. Okay, now, a lot of books are good. Don't misunderstand me. Like, the popular authors are always writing good books. So, I mean, Grissom and Patterson, I mean, they all have good books. Sure. What I mean by a good book, a book that I can start to read and I can get into the character. I especially like series. My most favorite one in that was The Wheel of Time, not the TV program, Clan of the K-Bear. It was a series. It followed this young girl from when she was first kicked out of her clan through to when she was a young woman, stuff like that. So I like a series. I like where I can get into a character and follow this character through their lives.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
So much so that a lot of times when I'm finished with those books, I feel like I'm leaving a friend.
That's a good feeling.
Yes, it is.
Well, we are actually at the end of our time together, and it's been such a pleasure.
Oh, my. That went fast.
Didn't it? Well, it always, when you have an interesting guest, it does, and you have a lot to share with us. I certainly hope that people are enlightened about Books Through Bars and say to themselves, gee, I didn't know this group existed. I'm going to look up their website, and I'm going to donate a book or two or money. You know, so it doesn't have to be a big donation. I'm sure you get $5, $10 donations.
Yes, absolutely.
Every dime is important.
Every dime is important, and every book is important. It doesn't have to be a large donation. We have people just dropping off one or two books. We make use of them.
That's great. Well, thank you again for being part of Pursuing Justice. I really appreciate your time, Tom.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. Pursuing Justice is a great outlet for me to get on and talk about this. And
often we talk about some heavy subjects like exonerees, wrongful conviction, false confessions, junk science. But today, this was delightful to talk about books. So thank you once again to the Innocence Project of Florida for sponsoring my show, and to my producer, Jordan Moore, at the Pod Cabin. Let me tell my audience a couple things. Next time, I hope to have the author of The Other Side of Prospect, whose name is Nicholas Dowdoff from New Haven. And in addition, I wanted to tell my listeners about a program I saw on 60 Minutes on March the 17th on CBS, which I think you can probably get on streaming. And it was about a woman that I've already interviewed. Her name is Jennifer Thompson, and she wrote a book with a man who assaulted her. They are the best of friends because he was not the man who assaulted her. She made a mistake, and the book that she wrote was Picking Cotton, they wrote. She has started a group called Healing Justice, and it is for the families who have been impacted by wrongful conviction and exonerees as well. She brings them together. So it was a wonderful, wonderful program. 60 Minutes devoted two segments to her story. And also on a program on CBS on Sunday mornings called Sunday Morning on March 17th. Bryan Stevenson was on, and some of you know that he is definitely my hero. He started Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama. So if you can locate the cameo that he did on Sunday morning, that would be terrific. So two little recommendations for my listening audience. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you'll join us next time on Pursuing Justice.